today on Against the Grain. What is political theology, and where is this field of inquiry headed? I'm C.S. Vincent Lloyd talks about his new co-edited volume, Political Theology Reimagined, coming right up. And this is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. My name is C.S. Song. We are told that some concepts and practices are entirely secular in nature. Is that always true? Are the complex interrelations of politics and religion always acknowledged? What would grasping those connections do to our understanding of the world and to our ability to change it? Vincent Lloyd directs the Center for Political Theology at Villanova University, where he is professor of theology and religious studies. He is co-editor with Alex Dubilet of the new volume, Political Theology Reimagined, to which Vincent contributed a chapter about Black feminist thought. When Vincent Lloyd and I connected recently, I asked him for a definition of political theology.
Political theology is about how religion and politics connect, but often people who are using the term political theology are interested in deeper connections than just who votes for whom. They're interested in how a concept that might have origins in a religious tradition gets redeployed in a political context, whether that's in the interest of the powers that be or whether that's in the service of transformative movements for social justice. So thinking about those deep connections, maybe about a concept, maybe about a practice, maybe even about a feeling, deep connections between things in the religious sphere and things in the political sphere, whatever the religion is, whatever the political context is, that would be a broad definition.
You write that perhaps the most important task of political theology is to critically engage with ostensibly secular political discourse. What do you mean here?
When we're thinking about political speech, whether it's at the level of mainstream political discourse or in radical social movements, we often imagine that what people are saying has nothing to do with religion, right? That they're just making arguments about what they believe or about what would be best, what would serve certain interests. But there are all sorts of instances where background religious ideas and commitments and ways of imagining are still informing the way that politics is happening. To give just one example, it's been in the news a bit now, the power to pardon, which we often think of as just, you know, one facet of a political system or the U.S. political system, that a governor or a president has the ability to pardon someone. But there's a whole history in religious traditions of thinking about how God has the power to make an exception to the laws, right? To create a miracle or to make the laws not apply in a particular instance. And that history is still present when the president or a governor is issuing a pardon. So that's just one example of the way that ostensibly secular practice or way of talking about politics might have a deep religious background. You might also think about the cases that have more clear religious resonance, like invocations of faith or hope or love, which certainly have secular meanings, but also have a very specific background, in that case, in the Christian tradition. The three theological virtues in a Christian tradition are faith, hope, and love. But we often forget that when we're talking in ostensibly secular political spaces.
Is there any way to generalize about how often claims of secularity ignore underlying theological notions?
So I think when we're approaching claims of secularity, there are a few things we can unpack. there can be an interest, an ideological interest, an interest that the state or the powers that be might have in managing religion, in making it so that claims that have a religious origin are seen as not religious at all, in order to make those claims seem more moderate or more mild, right? If they're if there's a tradition of abolitionism that's claiming a whole new world that runs as part of the discourses of the enslaved in the U.S., for example, that conjuring of a new world is a religious, a spiritual, a theological move. And yet it might be in the interest of political analysts or political theorists political actors to say, actually, that's just a more moderate demand. That's just a demand to make things a little bit better along these lines or those lines. It would be nonsensical to desire a whole new world, to see this world as fundamentally corrupt or fallen, and to hope for one that's radically transformed, where the last are first and the first are last, to invoke a specifically Christian language there. So I don't know that sort of counting or mapping the secular is as useful as noticing how claims that this is secular and this is religious are doing political work, that they're advancing certain interests.
So you and Alex Dubillet have co-edited this new volume, Political Theology Reimagined. What's the overarching purpose or project of this book?
Scholars and activists interested in connections between religion and politics have made some really interesting and useful observations about how political interests map onto or don't map onto religious beliefs and religious communities. And in some cases, there has been inquiry into those sorts of deeper questions about the conceptual foundations of political practice, both sort of statist and insurrectionary. On the other hand, many of those conversations take people to be simpler than they are, right? Someone who votes for a certain politician or checks a certain box about their religious belief on a form is not reducible to those beliefs or those votes. Their political interests and identities are dynamic and complex and formed in communities and have lots going on around them. Also, the discussions about religion and politics, well, to put it bluntly, tend to be dominated by people in a certain demographic. They tend to be men, tend to be white people who are interested in these questions, and that narrows the range of issues that are on the table. And Alex and I were really eager to expand that conversation, especially as we've been part of both academic and activist spaces where such important and incisive work is happening in gender and queer theory, in Black studies, in decolonial studies, in Marxist and anarchist studies. We thought it would be really useful for these conversations about religion and politics that want to move beyond a surface level to take advantage of and to contribute to those really rich, expanding conversations that grow out of both social movement and ideology critical discourses.
How much of political theology as the field exists today has a radical political edge, a radical leftist edge?
There are a surprisingly wide range of people using the term political theology, both in the academy and beyond the academy. People like J.D. Vance are sometimes described as having a political theology. Supreme Court justices are sometimes described as having or contributing to political theology. And there's a world of political theorists who are in the sort of center liberal space, who have an interest in political theology for largely for contingent reasons, that it was a term that circulated in Germany in the early mid 20th century and created a lineage of intellectual discussion around it. So all of that is the case. And there's also a quite vibrant corner of the space that's, you know, has one foot in the academy and one foot in the social movement world that sees political theology as committed to transformative images of justice, transformative movements toward justice. I think in part because of the changes in the academy in the last decade or two, there are more and more people who both are thinking critically about social movements, about economic justice, and have one foot in the academy, one foot outside, maybe moved in, moved out, between those different spaces. And also because there are people in religious communities not connected to the university who are interested in political theology because they want to know how their community can speak about politics. You know, that combination of sociological factors, that is, people moving between the university and activist spaces, people moving between religious communities and sort of activist spaces and sometimes academic spaces, means that there is, I think, a real desire for and emerging conversations around what radical political theology could look like. Sometimes those discussions advertise themselves as radical, and you know, I might hear their commitments as more sort of liberal progressive, but the aspiration certainly is there in many of those spaces, I think.
Vincent Lloyd is my guest. He is professor of theology and religious studies at Villanova University, where he directs the Center for Political Theology, and he's co-editor with Alex Dubilet of the new volume Political Theology Reimagined. It's published by Duke University Press. I'm C.S. Song, and this is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. You cite as the two most common starting places of political theology the classics of modern political theory and the classics of Christian theology. I want to focus on the second part here. Is the theology in political theology or most political theology primarily Christian?
Thanks for that question. And it's an important one to clarify because there are two different questions packed in there. One is people using the phrase political theology, you know, what are their religious commitments? And historically, there have been a lot of Christians using the phrase political theology to think about how Christians ought to engage in politics. There have also been a lot of Christians influencing all sorts of discussions of intellectual ideas and political ideas. So that's not particularly unique, that there's a kind of Christian dominance to the use of the term political theology. On the other hand, there are spaces, and not just one or two, but significant sort of spaces where political theology is being discussed in non-Christian traditions and in ways that are disconnected from any religious tradition. Just asking the sort of question that we were talking about earlier, for example, about pardon power. Is the sovereign, the governor or the president's power to pardon analogous to the power of God to pardon? That's a sort of question that's about structures, political structures, and their histories and their resonances with religious traditions, in that case, monotheistic traditions. But there's been interesting and exciting work thinking about political theology in Hindu contexts, when we're seeing religious nationalism in many places, Israel-Palestine, as well as around the world, religious nationalism is a term that people are worrying about. And political theology is a way of naming what's going into that religious nationalism in a way that acknowledges it's not just about a certain religious group who are, you know, acting badly politically, but that there's a swirl of affect and feeling, ways of imagining, ways of seeing the world, ways of hoping, right, that are all tied up with the religious and the political. And it takes some complex work to attend to that swirl, which is what we find in lots of different places around the world and across traditions and at the intersections of religious traditions.
So by ostensibly secular political discourse, we mean in part discourses of the state, and you've talked a little bit about that. You've also talked about activism and social movements, and social movements have discourses too. Do you have a sense that social movements advance a certain kind of secular political discourse that needs to be investigated for religious associations or religious roots?
Thanks. Yeah, that's a good question. I think the sense of the imperative there needs to be investigated. I would tether to practical interests, right? If we want social movements to realize their potential, right, to be as transformative as they need to be, then it might be important for us to look at the ways that forms of religious imagining, spiritual practice are already implicit in and sometimes explicit in social movement discourse and practice. I think around Black Lives Matter, we saw all sorts of interesting African and Africana derived spiritual practices becoming more visible, helping to bring together movement spaces, helping to orient activists and organizers toward justice when there are so many forces that they were facing. So again, I don't know that we need to look at religion in order to get things right or in order to reveal the truth about what's really happening in a social movement, but rather, you know, as people committed to the pursuit of justice, I think it's often the case that there are implicit commitments and practices that go unnamed that can be all the more effective when we give language to them. And that's part of what I see the potential of political theology being.
You and Alex Dubalet write that you'll find a crisis at the center of whichever origin story for political theology that you choose. Give us some examples.
So there are a few times in the last 100 years that the term political theology started circulating. One of those times was in Germany, immediately before the Second World War, where there was a critique of parliamentary democracy that was coming from both left and right. The sense was in the midst of economic crisis ahead of the Second World War, the political practices of parliamentary democracy were insufficient to respond to the economic and social and political crises that precipitated. Political theology was invoked in that context as a way of naming a way of organizing politics that depended on a strong sovereign, a godlike sovereign, as an alternative to democratic parliamentary structures. You know, in that case, that was a sort of right-wing critique of parliamentary democracy, where some of the target may have been right, right? There may be deep problems with parliamentary democracy, but the alternate vision may have been deeply wrong, right? The sort of sense of a strong sovereign figure, a strong ruler figure that was sort of justified in the Second World War context in Germany. Another moment that the term political theology started circulating broadly was in the late 60s, early 70s, also in Germany, among Christian theologians. Those Christian theologians were those who were sort of around young people, around protests against the Vietnam War, you know, around movements for decolonization, and were dissatisfied with the sense of religious commitments as apolitical. And in that 60s moment of crisis, they were calling on religious communities, specifically Christian communities in that context, to become politically committed in a direction of justice and support of decolonial movements. And finally, another context which I already alluded to, which you know, doesn't use the term political theology, but you know, talks about politics and theology together, is the movements to abolish slavery in the North American context and the transatlantic context, where deeply entangled in those abolitionist discourses were beliefs about God's law, beliefs about a justice that goes beyond worldly terms. And it was only, you know, in the crisis that was transatlantic slavery, both a political and in some ways ontological crisis where humanity was denied. It was by calling on some more than worldly languages and entities, both in Christian and Muslim contexts and in other contexts, and sort of spiritual contexts, calling on the spirits, calling on God, calling on Allah, that it was possible to imagine a world otherwise than the slaveocracy.
This is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. I'm C.S. Song. Vincent Lloyd, Vincent W. Lloyd, teaches at Villanova University. His books include Black Dignity, The Struggle Against Domination, and Religion of the Field Negro on Black Secularism and Black Theology. We are talking about a book he co-edited with Alex Dubilet. It's called Political Theology Reimagined. Carl Schmitt, one of the cornerstone thinkers of the field of political theology, was he part of that pre-World War II thinking that critiqued parliamentary democracy and tried to come up with alternative political arrangements, alternatives they thought would better guide the state through economic and social crises?
Yes, exactly. So Schmitt was one of those figures from that World War II era who was, on the one hand, offering theoretical insights that could be used in lots of different directions, for example, about the way that political concepts are often secularized theological concepts, but also taking that insight and running with it in a direction that supported fascism and supported authoritarian political leadership.
And with a foundational thinker like that, I mean, do you feel like a fair amount of political theological discourse is around responding to what Schmitt said, trying to refute his arguments, trying to turn the field in a different direction?
There's certainly one way that we could look at political theology as dialoguing with or responding to Schmitt, but I think that's a quite narrow way of seeing political theology that takes political theology on Schmitt's terms, rather than seeing it as naming a mode of inquiry, a mode of attending to the world that people have been doing and making use of for lots of purposes for a long time. And that often emerges, you know, in these moments of encounter where, as I was alluding to earlier, in the transatlantic slave trade, indigenous folks, African folks, folks in the North American and European continents were trying to come to understandings of each other, their worldview, how to both impose domination on each other and how to resist that domination, all of which was very productive of thinking and feeling that linked the religious and the political, right? To the language of domination, of mastery, is a language that is deeply resonant with religious traditions, right? Who is sort of paradigmatic master, but God, and who can contest all forms of worldly mastery, again, God in various religious traditions in and beyond Christianity. So I think if we're looking at those sorts of problems or questions, rather than looking at a specific lineage of academic debates or journal articles, right? If we're looking at the world rather than at the university, then we see political theology as a deeper history and one that is fundamentally attending to complexities that have always been part of our world and part of movements for justice.
Secular modernity, and I'm kind of taking this from your book, presents a triumphalist vision, right? That secular modernity has won out over what might be considered more antique, more regressive, unenlightened forms of thinking. How important is the task of sort of refusing or rebutting or pushing back against this kind of triumphalist vision?
That story of secular modernity is a story of elites, right? It's a story of men, a story of people in positions of relative comfort and power, often people concerned with the world of ideas. And it's always been a false story, you know, all around the world. When we look below that level of elites, we see people engaged in all sorts of creative spiritual practices, creative ways of building relationships not only with other humans, but with the natural world and with the more than natural world, with the supernatural world, however that manifests in various contexts. So I would not so much look at a secularization narrative, a story about the world becoming less and less religious, or of modernity as a triumph over religion. I wouldn't so much see those stories as true or false, but rather as political, right? They're trying to advance a frame for seeing the world that centers the experiences of some at the expense of experiences of others, and those others are those who have historically been disenfranchised.
Now, in this book, Political Theology Reimagined, you contributed a chapter as well as co-writing the introduction. And your chapter is about Black and feminist approaches that might be considered political theological or alongside of political theological investigations. And you begin by talking about Hortense Spillers, a Black feminist literary critic. What are you trying to say? And actually, you invoke a story that she wrote called A Lament, published in 1977. Are you using that story to make a point about how she approaches political theological issues? And I see that kind of one key theme within that story that you want to highlight is woundedness and healing.
Yes. So all of the chapters in this book are trying to experiment with what it would mean to approach political theology from the grassroots, from unexpected places, from unexpected sites of connection, instead of seeing Carl Schmitt, this Nazi legal theorist of the early mid 20th century, as the cornerstone of discussions about religion and politics. What would it mean if we took a Black feminist writer as someone with as deep, probably much deeper insights into the connections between religion and politics? So that was the experiment in my chapter there. I wanted to look at Hortense Spillers, who is both a renowned critic, but also a writer in her own right, and see how she is seeing connections between religion and politics in intimate spaces, in the spaces of relationships between a couple, in the spaces of a dance club, in the spaces of poor Black folks imagining what life could be like, and that's what her characters are doing. They're playing with, they're toying with religious images and practices, but they're doing it in their vernacular. They're doing it in ways that are genuinely playful, right? Not trying to create a system or a theory, not trying to explain how history fits together, but rather opening up new possibilities, new ways of imagining that put pressure on the views of race, gender, sexuality that readers might come to her story with.
That's the voice of Vincent Lloyd, professor of theology and religious studies at Villanova University, where he directs the Center for Political Theology. His books include The Problem with Grace, Reconfiguring Political Theology, and Break Every Yoke, Religion, Justice, and the Abolition of Prisons, which he co-authored. He's part of the editorial collective of the journal Political Theology. We are talking about his new co-edited volume with Alex Dubilet called Political Theology Reimagined. We have a link to that book on our website, againstothegrain.org. I'm C.S. Song. And how does Hortense Spillers understand the role that the Bible and reading the Bible and being part of Black theology and Black Christianity, the role that they can play in liberation and in healing?
Yeah, that was one of the things that I found most exciting as I was working on that chapter, that often there's a story about Black American Christianity that seems like it's fairly top down. There's a preacher in front and he's channeling God above and saying what people ought to do, what congregants ought to do, or what listeners ought to do. And even if that story is in the service of social justice or racial justice, it's still following this very hierarchical structure. What Spillers in her critical and analytical work is trying to do, I think, is imagine a horizontally structured Black American Christianity and say, that's what Black American Christianity is really like. It has this horizontal character where the most important relationships are not those of disseminating knowledge from above, from the pulpit, as it were, but rather the ways that a community listens together, discerns together, tries to figure out, tries to make sense of texts that are dear to them, that were formative of them, scriptural texts, but also other texts. And that way of cultivating a capacity to hear well and to interpret together well, Spillers sees as the very heart of Black American Christianity, and that reversal move from vertical, hierarchical to horizontal just strikes me as so powerful and useful in many other contexts, not just the Black American context, as a way of approaching, interpreting religious practice in communities.
Woundedness is, you note, at the center of everything that occurs in this short story, again by Hortense Spillers, called A Lament. And yet you write that Spillers urges us to attend to the wound, not to heal the wound. What do you mean there? Or what does she mean in your view?
This strikes me as one of the most important lessons that we who've been around social movement spaces for a while are continually learning, continually trying to get better at. Which is to say, we have an instinct, a very human instinct, to see something wrong in the world and want to fix it, right? To see some kind of wound in this broad sense and want to make it right. And of course, that's a powerful instinct and one that motivates action and struggle in important ways. But there's also a sense that healing that's premature, healing that happens before a sense of wounding has been fully appreciated, before we've attended as deeply as we need to the opacity of a wound, the sense in which a wound is not something we can immediately understand, but requires attention and discernment. Things can go wrong, right? When we try and respond too quickly is the sort of short version here. And I think Spiller's in her short story and in her analytical work is trying to juxtapose those two important instincts, the instinct to heal and the instinct to attend to wounds, and say, you know, sometimes in our personal lives and our social movement spaces, we move too quickly to that healing side, and we don't spend enough time on that attending to wounds side.
So after engaging with Hortense Spiller's for a while, you move in this chapter to a different strand of Black feminist thought, one that tends to be more spiritual as opposed to religious. One part of the strand is voodoo. What do voodoo healing practices, what do you find striking about them in the context of kind of the theme of this chapter?
To zoom out for just a minute again, in addition to looking at political theology from the grassroots instead of from the world of elite people talking about ideas, one of the things that interests authors of the chapters in this book is, you know, what if we look at sites where things that often are not classed as religion in the proper sense are still doing something like religion, and the sorts of forms of spirituality, Africana spirituality, that voodoo and other practices, Katomble and so on, represent, you know, are important parts of Black traditions. They're also important parts of many individuals' lives and have deep political power in them. And that means that we need to think critically about them. That means that we need to think about the ways in which they can both be used to challenge power and can support those in power, like all religious practices. There are no religious or spiritual practices that are only good or only bad, right? It's a matter of how these are utilized to advance or to the detriment of justice movements. So to address your question more directly, there's often a sense in representations of Africana religious practices, spiritual practices, that they're essentially about healing relationships. And that, again, seems important, but it also can move too quickly away from that mode of attending to wounds. So thinking with Spiller's, thinking with social movements, thinking with sort of scholars of Africana religion, what I want to do there is reflect on how can we have both, right? How can we have that instinct to heal and that instinct to attend to wounds when we're thinking about these Africana spiritual practices?
My guest is Vincent Lloyd, professor of theology and religious studies at Villanova University. He has co-edited the new volume, Political Theology Reimagined. The program is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. I'm C.S. Song. So stepping back a bit, because there are a number of chapters, very interesting chapters in this book, I'm curious how this volume engages with Marx, who you indicate showed interest in the theological as well as the political. And I think there are a couple chapters, right, in this book that talk about thinkers who have been influenced by Marx and how they approach political theology?
Yes, yeah, both on the surface and below the surface of several of the chapters, Marx is looming. There are also strands of anarchist thought that are important to some of our contributors in this volume. But Marx is a figure who is often read as quickly dismissive of religion. And of course, the slogan about religion as the opiate of the masses sometimes is invoked as a conversation stopper. On the other hand, just thinking about that one image for a couple minutes, the opiate of the masses is something that is ambivalent, right? It's something that may be useful for certain purposes at in a certain context. It could also be one that sort of makes possible deeper transformations. So, I mean, just in that tiny little phrase of Marx, right? There are things to dig into. And in the sort of strands of Marx as someone who puts forward a critical method, Marx is someone who sees attending to the economic structures of society as essential for understanding anything about culture or politics. And Marx is someone who sees social movements of the most marginalized as the best place we can look to understand truth and justice, right? These are all principles that I think are broadly shared by the authors of the chapters and interrogated by them as well.
And what about anarchist thought? Can you give us an example of a contribution to this book that uses anarchist concepts to present an argument?
So my co-author, Alex, is much more fluent in those circles, but I would point to his chapter there where he's thinking about the ways in the history of, for example, medieval Christian mysticism, where there are these antinomian moments, right? These moments where it seems as if there's a rejection of all order, all limits that are put on bodies, on minds, on space, right? And on rule. And that, you know, through that those sorts of moments of rejection, there are new ways of imagining community that we can think about in practical ways in terms of mutual aid today, but we might also draw lessons from, you know, what was it like for medieval mystics, you know, who are rejecting church rule to try and live in community with each other, right? Are there lessons that we could draw from that for mutual aid practices that we're trying to develop here in 2025?
And you spoke earlier about as kind of different strands of thought you want to bring to the fore, and which are being brought to the fore to some extent within political theology, decolonial perspectives, which makes me want to ask about what Rafael Vizcaino argues in your book about traditional secularization narratives.
Yeah, so Rafael is a great scholar of decolonial thought in Chicago, who is interested in theoretical resources from the global south. Enrique Dussel is a figure who's especially important for him. Dussel is a sort of towering figure of Latin American philosophy who is trying to reconfigure some of the philosophical moves that are made in the European tradition, but in a way that centers those who are most excluded on a global scale, those who are disenfranchised through the legacies of colonialism. And sometimes those sorts of stories and narratives centering the globally disenfranchised are operating in a different realm or part of a different conversation than conversations about secularization, that is, conversations about religion fading from or being repressed from or being managed in culture. Those secularization conversations tend to be focused on the West and the global North. So Rafael is asking, what if we put these two things together? How could we see the religious and spiritual practices that are emerging in Latin American contexts, right, as responsive to those global exclusionary dynamics.
Maybe it's unfair to bring up at this point in the interview, where we're near the conclusion, Giorgio Agamben, another huge figure within political theology, so much to say about his thought and what he argued. And yet there is a contributor, James Edward Ford III, who does take on Agamben and his theoretical framework. Any way you want to get into maybe one or two of Agamben's main contributions to this field and what Ford is pushing back against?
Agamben is an Italian philosopher who's influenced by Heidegger and Michel Foucault and others, and has been received with some controversy for various reasons in both academic and political spaces. One of the ideas that Agamben is known for, his best known series of books, is called Homo Sacer, which is about the sacred man or sacred human, which is looking at the way that a structure of exclusion and inclusion at once is at the heart of societies, to grossly oversimplify. But this structure of exclusion and inclusion at once, he points to examples like a werewolf or a king or various forms of exile, right? Where these are all figures who are pushed out of, but also important to, maybe even constitutive of a society, right? Where a king might, is one among a society, but also outside of the society, sort of standing above it. And so on. So these sorts of figures have something in common with each other, do this sort of work in constituting and holding together society, and also have a sacred aura about them, right? And for Agamben, the sense of the sacred is deeply attached to this particular social structure. James Ford, in a really interesting, or what I found to be a particularly interesting and provocative chapter in this book, is reading Agamben with Du Bois, and particularly Du Bois on the general strike, and thinking about the ways that both the way that Du Bois presents Blackness as an exclusion that's constitutive, right, an exclusion that makes possible society, and the general strike as a means of short-circuiting that logic that makes that which is excluded, Blackness, constitutive, formative of a society. James Ford is, I think, building on, but also challenging Agamben there, right? That it's not just that we're stuck with this social structure that means the sacred is always supporting the powers that be, but rather the sort of sacred aura around the general strike, which is also a way of imagining a new world and imagining an otherwise world, could be the thing that short circuits the sacred aura of the powers that be. So I'm not getting all the richness there, but that's the kind of direction that I think is really evocative.
So let me read one passage from, I think it's your chapter in this book. Again, it's called Political Theology Reimagined. The point of political theology in general is to acknowledge that we are embedded in a world of norms, not of our choosing, and our task is to figure out how to be disposed to those norms in such a way that they, whatever they are, will lead to freedom, to a new world after the end of this world. Comments?
I think those lines are representing a sentiment that was, that is broadly felt and has been broadly felt over the last 15 or so years in a variety of emerging social movement discourses, from the environmental movement to radical forms of feminism to Black Lives Matter and Black Studies theory spaces to critics of settler colonialism and Indigenous studies spaces, right? That there's a sense that there are interconnected forms of domination that make us who we are. We can't just step aside from them or step out of them. They're constitutive in that way. And yet there is still an imperative to imagine a new world, a world radically different from the world we have, a world that isn't just different, but is just and good. And that figuring out what that means and how we can position ourselves so that we can do that imagining work is very tricky, right? Often dreams are just reflections of desires that we have in the present that are given to us by others, right? That are not genuine desires, that are not opening a radically new horizon. And that this problem of imagining a radically new world that is just and good is one that religious traditions and religious communities have been grappling with for a really long time, centuries and centuries. So the book as a whole is just trying to ask, you know, what can we learn from, you know, taking this social movement grammar, which has become central to how we do justice work now, the grammar of imagining new worlds amidst constitutive interlocking forms of domination, and say, how can the wisdom of religious and spiritual traditions help us do that better? Hopefully the chapters in the book can help folks think through that question.
Vincent W. Lloyd, director of the Center for Political Theology at Villanova University, where he is professor of theology and religious studies. And we've been talking about his new co-edited volume, co-edited with Alex Dubilet, titled Political Theology Reimagined. Again, we have a link to that book on our website, againstothegrain.org. Vincent, thanks for your work and for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been really fun talking.
And this is CS, suggesting the important thing is not to stop questioning, and we hope you'll join us next time. Against the Grain is produced by Sasha Lilly and C.S. Song. You can visit us online at againstthegrain.org, where you'll find on-demand and downloadable audio, resources, and more.